I'm Chris.
And I'm Owen.
And this is the Dead Board Gamers Society.
All right. Hi, listeners. This is Owen again. We are joined today by a very special guest, Derek Osborne of Fifth Angel Studios. I met Derek when he was the director of sales at CMON Games. He's worked on a ton of games there and a ton of games before that, too. Pretty much if you are familiar with any Kickstarter through CMON, Derek's had a hand in some portion of that. But he's also been involved extensively behind the scenes in a bunch of design projects. He did some of the initial work on Wrath of Kings with Five Houses, if I'm remembering that right. He also, I believe, did some work on Relic Knights. But probably most pertinent to this discussion, he's currently bringing back the game Mercs, which was an old game that Chris and I both enjoyed. So I want to talk to him about the resurrection of that dead game. I guess a little bit more on him, too. He has an awesome YouTube channel called Throne of Angels. It's got a bunch of great content on some older dead games like Dark Age, Wrath of Kings, Warzone, Eden. He also is a big fan of Confrontation, which is another game Chris and I are really psyched on. So all that's to say, welcome, Derek. We're really happy to have you.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. Thank you, Owen. It's nice to talk to you.
Sweet. You too. You too. So normally we do like a quick little kind of hobby update of what's on our table. So, Derek, what have you been painting these days?
What haven't I been painting? Well, let me see. So immediately on my table, I'm actually working on some confrontation models. I am painting a number of Devourers of Vile Teas for an Ogre Vanguard. Yeah, Vanguard Warband.
Nice.
Vanguard being the skirmish game set in the Kings of War universe for Mantic.
Hmm.
And then I also have more confrontation models on the table in the one of my favorite armies, the Dwarves, Tirnabor.
Nice.
I actually have a 2,500-point Age of Sigmar army that is nothing but Dwarves at Tirnabor. So I play those as a Cities of Sigmar force.
Nice. That is a... That sounds like a hefty chunk of metal you got there.
Yeah, it's a lot of models. You know, of course, obviously, with bringing back Mercs, I'm painting a lot of those. And I did a hobby challenge with a couple of buddies of mine earlier last year that's carried over into this year. We did, quote-unquote, a sci-fi challenge where basically we just put together a bunch of random units of random models and some vehicles and just painted away.
Awesome, man. Right on. That's you are definitely more productive than Chris and I typically are. Chris, what have you been up to?
Well, I finished up my Wolfen Confrontation Army, so I'm excited to get that on the table.
Nice.
I just put down some Aristeia stuff, which I just picked up. I didn't own any of the models before. So I've been working on that, and I started assembly of, I forget what the building's called, but it's basically the Doctor Strange house, or the approximation of from War Cradle Scenics. There were way more pieces involved in that than I thought there were going to be. So I got the first floor done, and taking a little bit of a break before I go on to the second and third floors of that building. How about you, Owen?
So I've been working on a couple different things. I've got the Octopus Keeper's box from Eden that I'm trying to just finish up. That's been on the table for a minute. I also have some Sinwall for confrontation. And last but not least, I'm also painting up some models from a game called The Drowned Earth. So that's a small little skirmish game by some folks, I believe, over in England. Fun little 3x3, very cinematic D10-based system. So it's kind of like the old Capcom video game Cadillacs and Dinosaurs. So just stoked to paint something a little outside my normal style. But actually, last but not least, I should definitely not omit this one. I've got some Sadafu models from Fifth Angel Studios. So I've got 10 of those boys need to get painted up so I can start going out in the world and playing some games there. So yeah, that's me. So Mercs was a game that was originally published by Megacon Games, designed by Brian Schotten and the team over there, and was first released in 2010. The game was really notable for its unique initiative system and the way that models moved using a card, which is a little bit unusual. So a typical game for like a full-size game would be 5 28-millimeter miniatures for each player. Use D10s, and it was originally played on a 2-foot by 3-foot table. But I should note that in the newest version of the rules, which are currently up on the Mercs Miniatures website, put a link in the show notes, the table size is getting a touch bigger. So, Derek, since we have you here, and this is kind of your baby these days, do you want to give people a quick overview of the background of the World of Mercs?
So the World of Mercs, man, it's a tough place to start. Let me tell you a little story first.
Sure.
So when I originally got my start kind of in development for miniature gaming, I was actually doing work for Privateer Press.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a lead play tester for them for many years. Started in Mark 1 and went well into Mark 2. And I spent a lot of time with the development team living in Washington and having access to those guys. And like everybody who plays miniature games, right? You have a million ideas in your head and you're like, I want to make my own game. I want to do my own thing. And so I'd gotten together with a friend of mine, Thomas, who is actually my graphic designer, is doing the graphic design work for the merch relaunch. We'd gotten together and spent a bunch of time together really kind of outlining a project. And this project I called Fusion. And what it was is it was small corporate strike teams. Fusion Energy had become a thing in the real world, and there's kind of a catastrophic happenstance that happens in the year, I believe, if I remember right, it was like 2232 or 2332, something like that. The entire government structure of the world fell apart, and corporations took over. Right? Very dystopian. I mean, it's not an original idea, but it's just what happened in the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had all these corporate strike teams, and the point and the purpose of these corporate strike teams was effectively to go out and perform missions in corporate espionage, stealing, you know, information and tech and other things from other corporations. So I'd written up a rule system, and we'd actually started concepting artwork and putting things together, and I'd gotten to a point where I was happy with it, so I started actually pitching it to game publishers, Privateer Press being one of those publishers that I had initially pitched this project to. And after the second pitch that I had, Mercs was launched.
Oof.
Yeah, dude, it was painful. So I've had this concept, right, running around in my head since like 2008 or so, and it was something that I put some time into. Mercs launched, and originally it was Mercs Miniatures was the company, right? It was Brian and Fluff. Mercs is, as you said, a near future tabletop skirmish game that evolves around corporate controlled territories, right? So you have a number of megacons, which is essentially these huge corporations that have taken over areas, right? Governments essentially were abolished. And if you want to know the yearly timelines, I don't have them all memorized yet because I've been focusing more on gameplay than I have on Fluff, right? Fluff is kind of next on the table, and that's where I'm going to focus some of my energy here the next 2 to 3 months, is really kind of on Fluff, expanding the story and moving the timeline forward. But essentially what you're looking at with the previous version of the game, in the early 2100s, I believe, you have kind of the failing of the governments and the taking over of these corporations and really kind of establishing city-states, so to speak, but they're corporately run. And there's currently 12 of them, and spoiler alert, that's going to change. We may talk about that a little more, we may not, but be aware that there is change coming, right? I mean, you can't advance the timeline without breaking eggs, right?
Mm-hmm.
With essentially where things are at, I think it was 2013 when they ran Operation Paradigm Shift.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And that was another really kind of entertaining thing. I have a lot of love and respect for Brian. And for him, it's, you know, there's a little admiration there because him and I were thinking along parallel lines at quite the same time. So if you remember the second Adepticon that Wrath of Kings was at, there was a narrative event that was played for the entire week that literally changed the environment of the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
That was my brainchild and something that I really wanted to incorporate into the Wrath of Kings structure, right? A continuous yearly project that updated the storyline that was driven by the fan base.
Yep.
Brian had done it about 6 months earlier, and I had not known that, right? I missed Operation Paradigm Shift. I totally didn't know that he had done that, and that's exactly what it was, right? It was they ran this worldwide campaign through Beasts of War and changed literally the face of the history of their game, right? You're working on Safadu. Safadu was a mega corporation, but they were taken out. Now they're just like a guerrilla strike force. And
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that literally changed completely one structure of a megacon, because they're no longer actually a corporate powerhouse, right? You've got a few other megacons that changed ever so slightly, but essentially over the course of time, in my mind, as players, you know, attach themselves to certain megacons, how attached are you to that megacon, right? Do you want it to continue forward? Do you want to actually see it grow and prosper? Or is it just kind of a fleeting, you know, side love where you're really more attached to a different megacon, but you like to play this, you know, let's just use CCC as an example. You like to play the CCC, but you really love the EU. As you go through your yearly play, right, and you start reporting campaign points, and it's obviously become a lot easier now with technology and with the advances of things and how we can report stuff and you know, really kind of pull information from the player base as opposed to 10 years ago when a lot of it was just email driven. The ability to actually make change with the community is literally right in front of us. And so obviously I've gone on a long tangent here with kind of some plans and things that I'd like to do, but essentially the at the very core of Mercs, what Mercs is in regards to background is it is the collapse of true governing bodies in the countries that obviously the government's occupied and a rise of corporate control.
And, you know, how does something like the, is it the FCC fit into that, the different houses?
So the FCC is basically everybody who's opposed to corporate control, right? So you've got various houses, and really only two of them have been revealed. The third or fourth have been talked about in some of the fluff. There's a book out there by J.L. Allen called The Worker's Heart. So The Worker's Heart is out there, and I do have a PDF of that. I'll probably get that up on the webpage. Don't know if I have to sell it or if I can give it away. I have to basically work out the legalities of that. And once I have that figured out, we'll get that up and available for people. But there is discussion of a house in there. There's also reference to House 12, which is kind of based on a pseudo-religious, everybody's named after a saint type thing. So the different houses essentially are opposed to corporate control, and they work in a, I don't want to say nefarious, because it's, you know, really kind of the small guys trying to get one over on the big guys, but they work, you know, in the background trying to really undermine the corporate side of things, right? So House 9 really basically pulled one over on the USCR when they gathered up the GCC and every single other megacon and essentially invaded Russia. Then you have also, you know, as we were talking about Operation Paradigm Shift, right? It is House 9 who is responsible for the fall of Svadu. So essentially the FCC are your freedom fighters.
Yeah, it definitely gives you a lot of different options. You know, you mentioned, you know, making some things change in the future, and sometimes that's additive. Sometimes that might be changing, you know, just changing the role of something in the background or subtractive. You know, I think this is a really, really great game for that style of narrative, just because the overall buy-in for a player is so small compared to what it is for other games. I mean, I've got my entire army of 10 archetypes for, what, 40 bucks? I imagine MSRP might be a little bit higher if you guys do new sculpts, but that's significantly lower than it's going to be for even a lot of skirmish games. So I look at it a lot as almost being kind of a cousin to a sports game. The cost to get into this is more like something like a Blood Bowl Necromunda squad than it is like a full-on skirmish commitment, which lets you play a lot of different options. And, you know, if one of those gets benched for a little bit, not the end of the world. You got plenty of other fun things you can do.
Exactly. So in the miniature gaming world, there's like one cardinal rule, right? You don't ever destroy your own product, mm-hmm. right? The only company that's ever really done that is Games Workshop, right? Where they got rid of the squads and, you know, basically they've sidelined a number of armies. You know, we saw a return with the Sisters of Battle, but for the most part, when G-Dub says, okay, sales suck on this, we're getting rid of it, and it just goes away, right? They literally destroy, for some people, thousands of dollars of investment.
Yep.
With Mercs, if we kill a Megacon, right, hostile takeover or, you know, subterfuge, and something happens, like you said, you're out 40 bucks.
Yep.
And, you know, one of the things that I'm very conscious of is that investment, right? I've been a miniature gamer my entire life. I literally started in 1987 with Warhammer 40,000, right? I bought Rogue Trader 2 months after it was released here in the U.S.
Damn.
I have a ridiculous amount of models for a ridiculous amount of games, right? I have models for Eden. I have models for Confrontation. Every game that you name off, I have models for Warzone, right? I mean, I have models for a lot of dead war games, but I have models for a lot of active war games, right? I mean, I've got 14 armies for Age of Sigmar. Oof. So I understand the investment on that side of things, right? I'm a hardcore gamer, and it's obviously a huge part of my life and has been for many, many years. But being mindful of how people look at products and how things sell, right? If I were making an army game, I can't make sweeping changes. But in a small skirmish game where you have, like you said, 10 models, making a sweeping change, you might ruffle a little feathers now and again, but nobody's going to lose their minds.
No, I think that's it's a very fair way to approach it, and I think it lets you do some kind of fun and different things to really stand out from the crowd. So I'm stoked to see what y'all end up doing with it. But enough about the background. Let's talk a little bit about what makes kind of Mercs a little bit different. So, you know, there's a lot of different near, you know, actually near future is probably a bit rare, but, you know, sci-fi to near modern tabletop games out there. So let's talk a little bit about what makes Mercs special. So I've got a couple things keyed up, but Derek, if I'm missing anything, please jump in, and you definitely know this probably better than most anyone. But you know, when I think of, you know, back to the early 2010s playing Mercs, you know, what do I remember most about it? Well, the first big thing is the movement system. So Mercs 1 and 2, and it's still an option in 2.5, you used a card to move. So typically it'd be your corporate card, and in 1.0 was actually all your cards had little cutouts for a 30 mil base. And you could use that when you moved to actually move your miniature. Later on, it was just your corporate card. They sold acrylic cards to do the same thing. But a model has a set number of movement points, and you could then, you know, move that many card lengths forward. There were special places you could land. It was different. There was a bit about snapping to cover. There was actually a pretty popular blog called Snap to Cover. I think it was snaptocover.com, where at this, you know, during a move, either beginning, end, different points, you could move a single base length either towards terrain or towards a friendly model. In the new version, you've changed that a little bit. So now it's just a lateral move at the start. I do also like that now there's the option to use a tape measure. The cards were cool, but it could be a little bit goofy sometimes with three-dimensional terrain to kind of get in there and get an accurate placement. So I do like that now you've got the option. Anything on that you want to add, Derek?
Yeah, well, so the card movement, you either love it or you hate it, right? I've noticed it is one of the extremely polarizing things about the early edition of Mercs. So when Mercs was first released, you know, I mean, obviously I bought the book and I bought a box set, and you know, I explored kind of the game in its infancy, and I didn't like the card movement system. It was too restricting for me. But understanding why it was built for a 2D table, right? It was built for, you had terrain cards that were included with, you know, with your box purchase. When you bought card packs, there were terrain cards inside the card packs. So you built a table literally flat. And so it worked really well with that 2D movement and 2D representation of the table. Well, being a guy who had huge amounts, you know, huge collection of terrain in a very large 3D scope, it was very difficult for me to actually get that system to work. The thing about the card movement system, right, when they went from 1.0 to 2.0, right, and that was launched essentially when they did the Recon Kickstarter, they added tape measures to that movement system, right? So the 2.5 system didn't introduce tape measures. It just kept them as part of the movement system. And so right now you have the options to use both. And the thing about the card system, and you hit on it perfectly, it's a little awkward sometimes in regards to how you move inside of 3D space. And the overarching change really to the movement system was just to allow kind of an easier engagement mechanism, right? On top of that, there were a few things that I changed specifically to allow easier movement and to make movement less of a constricting problem that some of the players were complaining about, right? I mean, I did a lot of reading and a lot of research on some old forums and some old web pages. You know, I mean, there's still some decent material out there four mercs from System 1.0 and System 2, where some of the players really had invested some good amount of time into discussing some of the issues and some of the problems with the movement system specifically. So we actually, you know, had a small little development team, which is basically a bunch of my friends that did a lot of playtesting for me at CMON. We went over the movement system literally with a fine-tooth comb to essentially break it down so it was easier for people to engage with going into 2.5.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, and please, thank you for the correction on the tape measure being in 2.0. I didn't play as much 2.0 as I did 1.0, so if I say anything dumb about 2.0, please definitely call it out. Cool. So we talked about movement, and that's awesome that things have been cleaned up a little bit in 2.5. The other thing that I really remember sticking out about kind of the core gameplay was the initiative system, which was a little bit different than a lot of other games. So during the initiative phase, you'd in 1.0 at least, you'd roll a d10 for every model in your crew, and that would be the order starting at 10 going down to 1 that models would activate. If there was a tie, you would resolve that using the two models' reaction stats. And you had a couple ways. If you got a really high initiative, someone you wanted to save for later, you had a couple options to kind of set that up to happen a little bit later in the turn. If you wanted to have a combination, go off with some other models in your crew, so things like bounding, things like going on hold, etc. The new version mixes that up a little bit, though. Do you want to take it away on the new version?
Sure. So one of the primary drivers for me when resetting the 2.0 system, right? I mean, I needed to obviously address and clean up some inconsistencies in the rules base itself, the wording, and, you know, basically things that counteracted each other that shouldn't have. I was lucky enough to have one of the longtime supporting players actually send me the list that was created from the initial launch of 2.0 of things that were needed to be FAQ'd or corrected. So that helped a lot.
Nice.
One of my primary drivers for evolving the system was to make the game faster, right? You got 10 models, right? The game should play inside of 30, 40 minutes. It shouldn't take longer than that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I really wanted to express was the game is not the mosh pit in the middle where everybody runs to the middle and just shoots each other and winner is the last man standing. I don't like those types of games. And so you and I have talked at length in the past in regards to scenario-driven and motivation-driven gameplay. Well, Mercs is essentially taking that idea and really extrapolating it and making it much bigger, right? I mean, if you've read the mission logs, you can tell that I put a lot of time into actually building those out as experiences versus just putting your models on the table and running at something and seeing if you can turn on it. So part of that incorporates huge levels of strategic thinking and tactical execution, right? I want that to start at the beginning of the game in a very literal way, right? Not just at the initiative stage, but literally when you are building out your team, right? So I built the draft system into selecting your team. After you select your mission and you set up your table, right, you draft your team. That's the initial step to the tactical challenge of what you're facing, right? So as you and your opponent kind of draft out your team, it's supposed to represent a couple of things, right? One, having a little bit of tactical knowledge beforehand of what what opposing force is actually coming in at you, plus being able to actually build out specific things that you want to do to actually activate your plan of attack for the mission. The mm-hmm. second part of that is the initiative system, right? So with the need or the desire to speed up gameplay, rolling all the dice at one time and assigning them is actually much quicker than rolling one at a time, placing one at a time, placing one at a time, placing, right? You roll them all at one time and then you alternate placement with your opponent. You still have ways to modify where you put your dice and how your dice results the activation of the models in that turn. But what it does is it speeds up gameplay. And again, it allows you to make tactical choices based off of what you see your opponent doing.
Yeah, no, I really like this change a lot. I think this, to your point, I think it's definitely going to meet the design criteria of speeding things up, but I do like it. It just adds that extra layer of beyond which mercs have I picked for this mission. The initiative mini game is, I think, going to be almost as important as what you actually try to do tactically on the table. I think that's going to be huge, and it's just another way to express skill in the game. So I'm really, really excited you know, small model count, high skill expression games. And I think this is really going to help Mercs be that kind of game. We talked a little bit about the Mercs themselves. So in terms of the models, I mentioned that I have a new Mercs crew. There's 10 models in that. And these aren't named character models. They're different archetypes. And what I like about Mercs is you can only ever take one of each archetype. So you have a leader, a heavy, a demo. You can't just pick a crew of five heavies or five demos. So you definitely, I think, it behooves you to be familiar with the different models you have. For people totally unfamiliar with Mercs, in 1.0 and in the new version, there is no customization of the individual models. You're not buying war gear for them. They're not specifically named characters. So if you want to start your own story about your own guys, you know, feel free. Background definitely supports that. And, you know, basically, as Derek's mentioned, and I'll let him take it away from here in a second, at the beginning of the game, you're going to draft five of your archetypes, kind of like you would in something like Guild Ball, and that's going to be your crew for that mission. So keeping in mind what your opponent can do, keeping in mind what you need to do for the mission, all plays into that. I'm really stoked for this as an option.
One of the things that I do, or that I've always really liked about Mercs, is the option to really kind of tailor make your strike team, right? So with the numerous different archetypes, you know, and you hit on a few of them, obviously, there are more archetypes than what you have available to your team, right? So you only have 10 models available in each MegaCon. However, right now there's 14, I believe, different archetypes, and there will be more archetypes coming down the line, right? You want some spoilers for 3.0, there's one. You're going to have some more archetypes, right? And so that could mean one of two things, right? If your MegaCon doesn't have an assassin or something similar to an assassin, right? A melee monster, it could very well get one. Or you could get something completely new, right? So one of the things that I did that, you know, when initially looking at Mercs, some of the things that went through my head were, well, this game came out in 2010 and technology was a hell of a lot different in 2010 than it is right now, right? So I used a simple example. You know, some people will notice that there are a lot of modifiers that have been changed or removed altogether. Well, my wife's car tells me when there's a car in my flank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if we're looking at super suits, literally 200 years in the future, I'm going to have the expectation that my HUD is going to tell me there's somebody in my flank.
Definitely.
Right. And so some of the things that we did in regards to making those changes, I took out essentially the, I don't remember what they're called off the top of my head, but basically the guys that injected you with adrenaline and super steroids.
Boosters.
Boosters. Thank you. Yeah. I changed the boosters to a jammer. Right, so I removed boosters from the game because realistically, if we're going to do something in that regards, right, if we're looking at super suits, that stuff should already be in my suit.
Yep.
So we pulled that concept out. It may return later. That's not a spoiler because I haven't decided whether that's going to happen or not. But I introduced the jammer, right? That's my counter-electronical warfare type model, right? Essentially, that is a model that does a number of things that allow you to kind of control in various ways your opponent, right? Whether it's weapons that lower values for certain stats on your weapons, or, you know, simple things like EMP grenades, right? The jammer is there to actually perform a little bit of counter-electronic warfare. So new archetype, right? We may see more new archetypes in 3.0, or we could see the, you know, your faction gets an archetype that it doesn't have, right? Those are a couple of things that may happen as we move forward.
Nice.
So the, again, to me, the strength of the game comes from the uniqueness of what it is, right? Brian did a great job with a lot of things. You know, I mean, as much as I hate to say it, Mercs kind of fell to the wayside, right? Mm. They focused on a couple of things that were outside of the Mercs universe, and it's lost a little bit of its focus.
I'll buy that.
With the archetypes, that's what I really kind of want to bring back, right? Changing archetypes to kind of a subclass, right? And then allowing more focus on corporate and special abilities.
I think for people that are unfamiliar with the game too, you might hear, oh, there's different archetypes, corporation. So, you know, heavy in corporation A is going to be like a heavy in corporate. No, they can play and be incredibly different, partially because the other thing that I really like about Mercs is how a lot of the special rules are handled. So each corporation has two special rules that are your corporate special rules. these are really faction-defining abilities. So something like Kemvar, which has stealth armor, which makes them very, very difficult to hit. Or someone like the USCR, which has a very, very tough armor. There's types of weapons that are lower strength that just totally plink off them. Don't even worry about breaking. You're incredibly tough. So those help inform how the overall faction will play, but then each model has personal abilities that help each model do its intended role just a little bit better. These can be things like leaders giving benefits to hit for people around them. They can be things like a jammer having special abilities to turn off special rules. If you're the leader of Keziwaza, it can be a nuclear missile on your back. All sorts of fun stuff. There's also kit, which kind of defines, you know, what your weapon special rules are, or if you have like a med pack, that sort of stuff. Would you say that's a fair summary, Derek?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think this is one of the really special things that Brian came up with, right? You know, the statement that I think 2.0 Lost Focus really kind of revolves around the corporate, you know, the corporate traits and the personal abilities. And the reason that I say that is quite simply this. Mercs 1.0, every corporation had like kind of a solid identity, a feel to who they were. And as it evolved into 2.0, that kind of fell apart, right? You kind of lost that. And so another one of the really hardcore design philosophies that I brought was to redefine the corporate traits and the personal abilities and really to make each faction feel unique, right? So you got the CCC, right? Those guys, they are your... Basically, they're your baseline, right? Those guys, they have two functions. One, really to establish that baseline that sets the balance for the game, right? Mm-hmm. Because there is an internal point structure that is used to build out the balance for the game. And those guys are the core of that balance. But they're also kind of a melee specialist, right? They're the melee specialist that has staying power. Right, because their armor self-repairs. Mm-hmm. And so the personal abilities, generally most of their models get revolve around those two things, right? So when you start looking at how a corporation functions as a whole, you'll see that their personal abilities tend to amplify that as opposed to everybody has to have X, everybody has to have Y.
Mm-hmm.
So the core is to keep everything unique and special. The difficulty is keeping it all balanced.
Yeah, I can imagine, particularly in a game at point cost, you know, you're just balancing number of models. You're not balancing, you know, this model costs 32 points and you can shim a similar model up to 35 if it's a little better. So that's got to be a tricky problem.
It's been a very interesting way to go about developing a project. Obviously, some of the work that I did on Wrath of Kings helps, mm-hmm. You know, because Wrath of Kings typically doesn't have point values, right? You build an army in a very specific manner, and you don't actually utilize points in Wrath of Kings. You know, I mean, it was good to actually go through that exercise beforehand, because approaching this project, I felt that I definitely had the right experience to move into a space where points were not a thing.
Right on. That's awesome. So, Chris, what might be reason someone would be really, really excited for Mercs?
I think there's a couple. The biggest one is definitely for people who don't want to paint a lot of stuff. You know, for all of those people who've avoided GW games or other big games because, oh man, like I have 50 things to paint or 60 things to paint. You know, painting up 10 models to be done with a complete faction. Like not even just like an army, but just like, hey, I have everything for the faction. It's 10 models. They're all 30 mil models. There's, you know, there's no gigantic like tanks or airplanes or what have you. That's definitely a benefit if someone's been, you know, kind of like eyeing up Infinity, but they want something that doesn't require that same amount of just rules knowledge and rules depth. I think this is a good option. You know, Infinity has a lot of the same kind of aesthetic to it, especially in like the smooth armor plating. You know, the you know, nods off to anime styling in certain areas, but it has just, you know, the doctorate almost in here are universal rules, read these like 60 pages, all of them will come up in this game. And lastly, you know, like I think for people who do enjoy it, kind of like draft style games where you have an influence over your, you can have an influence over your opponent's army. They can have an influence over yours, and you know, vice versa, where, you know, you're creating your, you know, your squad out of a roster to kind of accomplish, you know, like, I'm going to play against this other megacorp. I want to make sure I bring this specific archetype because it's going to crack their armor better, you know? Or we're playing to this specific kind of mission. I definitely want this archetype. It's going to help me score my objectives.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, it reminds me of like a really intelligent way of, Chris, I think you remember back in like the Mark II War Machine days where you'd have a three list event and mm-hmm. you know, kind of pick your best list for your matchup or prospective matchups in the scenario. But that's, you know, probably more than you can easily fly with in terms of models. Whereas, you know, Mercs, that's not even one tray of my magnetic carrying case. So I definitely like that that metagame aspect without requiring a gigantic army to achieve it.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you can have a full roster in your bag in the same amount of space that, I mean, even a lot of skirmish games, you know, one list is going to take more than 10 models. You know, I mean, like, even looking at like a Wild West Exodus or, you know, something in that kind of similar skirmish kind of area, you get to travel with a lot more options in a comparable or smaller amount of space.
Hey, Derek, is there anything else in that's new in 2.5 you want to touch on that we haven't already mentioned?
Anything that's new in 2.5? Well, you know, I hate to be that guy, right? But, I mean, realistically, we've touched on a lot of good key points in regards to what's new in 2.5, but it's not a big rule book, right? I mean, it's less than 50 pages. And if you're a Mercs fan, go download it. It's free, right? Yeah. If you're new and you're hearing about Mercs for the first time, again, go download it. It's free, right? So the thing about Mercs, what really, really excites me about Mercs is the opportunity that the community has to build something unique and special for themselves. Some of you know, and a lot of you who are listening to this will, you know, will hear me say this over and over and over again. We literally are a two-man company. The entirety of development and design, even art direction and new character creation, it all falls on my shoulders, right? My partner, Kirk, not only does he have another business in Miniature Building Authority, right? I mean, our sister company, he manages most of that on his own, where he does everything that I do in regards to product development for that company. He also manages logistics for both companies, right? So he's the guy that ships your products. He's the guy that pulls your orders. And literally, you know, the small warehouse that we have in Georgia, he's a one-man operation, and they're pulling all the orders from both companies. And so it literally is a labor of love for both of us, right? But mm-hmm. the thing is, you know, I saw an opportunity. I talked to Kirk about it, and we approached Brian, and we obviously bought the IP and brought it back to the fan base. Well, the way that we build out a new fan base is to allow the community to do its thing, right? So is there stuff that I'd like to talk about for 2.5? Oh, yeah, without a doubt. There's more things. I mean, you and I and yeah. Chris could sit down literally at a table and talk about it for hours. But the thing is like I said, it's not a big rule, right? Mm-hmm. It's less than 50 pages, right? I think there'll be some things in there that surprise and entertain you. And I'll be honest with you, I'm actually really surprised that nobody's like really kind of going, what the hell did you guys do? You screwed up this game. I was expecting somebody to lose their mind, and it hasn't happened yet, which to me means a couple of things. One, it means that I'm on the right track. And yep. Two, it means that people are accepting of change, which is great, right? Because that tells me the plans that I have for 3.0 in changing, you know, parts of the fluff and advancing the storyline and maybe losing a MegaCon here or there, coming up with a new MegaCon. The plans that I have, I hope, will be as well received.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you keep up the types of changes you put in, I think you have a really high likelihood of success there. So, you know, speaking of the future, you know, you've kind of hinted a couple things about 3.0. Any other, you know, big hints or secrets you want to drop?
Big hints or secrets. So I've got a huge whiteboard here. If I could take a picture of it, it would like literally destroy the entire quote unquote secret that I have. But there will be a new faction. There's nice. No question there will be a new faction. So my last name is Osborne. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put a challenge to people here. If you do the research on where my name comes from, you will understand where the new faction is going to come from.
I'm betting it's Mercs that eat bats. that's my guess.
Oh, well, I'm going to make a model of you, Chris, eating a bat.
All right. I will hold you to that.
One of the other things coming for 3.0, all new models, right? I mean, the models obviously are decade old. The stock that we got when we made the purchase, you know, all PVC product lines from the Recon Kickstarter. That's why it's so inexpensive to actually buy a set, right? Will we do metals? We might, right? We still essentially have two more things to look at in regards to substrates, right? We will definitely not do resins for game models. It's not going to happen. Resin is too finicky and too brittle to do for game models. Now, if you read the newsletter that went out last night, and yes, I know I spelled briefing wrong. It was late and I was tired. It happens, right? So forgive me, team, on that. But to start out with, I'm going to do a line of either 60 or 75 millimeter liter models. And I'm leaning towards 75 millimeters. So basically what's going to happen for the collectors out there, these are going to be a limited run, right? Okay. I'm going to make 100 of each model and that's it. And understand that two of those are staying in house. One is mine and one is Kirk's. So there's only going to be 98 to sell. And so each one of those models, right, 60 or 75, and I'm leaning towards 75 millimeters because I want to see some really pretty stuff from the painters out there. I would really like to see some of these models actually get put into the high-end painting competitions, right? That, you know, because half of this hobby for me is painting and modeling and really enjoying the aesthetics of the beauty of miniature art. And so I really, really want to see these models occupy some space on collector shelves that are beautifully done, beautifully painted, and executed at a very high level. Following that, though, that same model is going to get a 32 millimeter sculpt, right? You're going to be able to get that same model. So gamers will be able to get that model, but that's going to be the first model. The leader models will be the first models that are re-sculpted for each one of the corporations, right? Okay. So each one of the models after that, right? And it'll still follow the same box layout. So box one will get done, box two will get done. And I had put up a poll to ask the community at large. And right now it's small, but that to me, that's my hardcore fan base. And those guys are the ones that are going to get rewarded first. So the first models will be Kaizawaza.
Okay, right on.
Following that, we'll see Kemvar and then CCC.
Makes sense. I mean, those always felt like they were fan favorites back when I was playing. So no big surprises to me. I'm a little surprised House 4 was a little higher up. I remember they were also a fan favorite, but I mean, yeah, all those are awesome. They have really great aesthetics. So stoked to see all those.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, one final spoiler. Yes, there will be some mega cons that don't make it to 3.0.
Oh, no. Well, I think that's plenty of teasers to get people enticed. Derek, I know you're a big minis guy. Do you have any particular favorite model from the original Mercs line?
So I really like the ISS.
Okay.
You know, the execution on some of the sculpts wasn't that great, but the concepts, right, that Keith did were phenomenal. And some of the ISS sculpts are absolutely outstanding. If I had to pick a favorite model, though, oh, maybe the GCC Judge.
right on. We'll put a picture of some of these in the show notes. But yeah, no, that's definitely an iconic character. Chris, did you have any particular favorite minis from the line?
I was kind of torn between three. Two of them in Texaco. I like the leader because the leader had the dog. So that was just, you know, like it was there's all of these models, there's all these humans, and there's a dog. Of course, it's going to be a favorite. I also like, I really like the Marshal because, you know, everybody was wearing armor, but he's the only guy who's also throwing on like a huge, you know, Western style duster. So like they just kind of stood apart from some of the other factions for me, which was pretty neat. But I also really, really liked the USCR Behemoth. Like I think it's one of the most dynamic poses that I've seen
that
in the range.
That model is super dynamic. You're 100% correct.
Where, you know, like the step forward, and it, you know, it also definitely characterized the whole, you know, Russian feel to the USCR of, well, yeah, you know, we have a guy with a big hammer, but our guy with a big hammer also has like cannons on his back. like, and just extra armor. Like, this is that was probably the closest thing, I guess, that you could really get to tank it, like taking an actual tank in the game, was the Behemoth. It was a really cool model.
Yeah, no, I actually knew people that used to use him, you know, proxied onto a 50 mil base as a proxy for the Kador Behemoth. So get rid of, you know, Captain needs to go to legs day. You know, mine, it's funny, I never played the CCC, but there's just something so iconic about the original CCC Heavy. Just the curved angles. It's not the kind of like hard right angles of a lot of the near future or futuristic power armor. He just had a really kind of iconic sculpt. It was just this menacing, just, I'm just going to unload my chain gun into you. You know, when the original Merc Minis CCC team came out, that was the one that got me stoked and actually got me to check out the game.
I believe that model actually won a couple awards as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. Right on. I mean, it should, in my opinion. So, great. So, Derek, we ask all our guests a couple of questions, and we're going to force that upon you, too. So, do you have a favorite Dead War game?
That's a good question. a favorite Dead War game. So, as much as I hate to say it, you know, I poured 4 years of my life into Wrath of Cain. And when I say 4 years, I'm talking about full-time, 4 years, 40 hours a week. Being the only designer developer to work on that product from concept to market, Wrath of Kings is without a doubt my favorite Dead War game.
Right on. Okay. Yeah. I mean, and I know it's been a fan favorite for our listeners, so I'm sure they'll be happy to hear that. Are there any Dead War games you wish people knew more about?
So there was a game once upon a time ago called Boar, the Maelstrom.
Awesome.
I love that game. I absolutely loved Boar when I was younger. And that's one of the games that I think people really missed out on, right? Because it fell kind of in a time where Games Workshop was really kind of in its infancy with 40K. Fantasy Battle, I think, was like its second edition. And it just kind of occupied this small space that was very, very, very niche. And so, you know, Vor the Maelstrom is probably one of those games that I really wish people had.
There's so much of that game that I thought was really interesting. I mean, FASS's foray into tabletop sci-fi was always going to be interesting, particularly given their monetization model of you know, not being the ones to make the miniatures. So they were a lot more willing to try kind of crazy stuff in the rules. You know, seeing Matt Wilson come out of that company and grow into what, you know, became Privateer Press was also super interesting. And it's funny. I'm friends with people that are actually friends with Scuzzy through like music and skateboarding, not through tabletop wargaming. So it was weird to see him pop up in like a Facebook feed, like, wait, how do you know? And just kind of like pieced it all together. So it's wild how small of a world it is, but good call there, man. That's a deep cut, but we definitely second that. We'll have to get around to trying to find some people to talk about that in the future. Maybe we'll give you a call back and you can come on and talk about Vor too.
Oh man, I'd love to. Yeah, sweet. I would really enjoy that.
Awesome. Hey, is there anyone or anything you want to give a shout out to?
Shout outs. You know, I'll be honest with you. I would love to give a shout out to the MegaCon Games crew, right? I mean, we're looking at three guys who are a little bit ahead of their time, and they did some really, really cool stuff, right? Tom Mason is a phenomenal sculptor. If you guys don't follow him, jump on his Instagram, right? I mean, if you want to put links up, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. Definitely. He just did a Kickstarter for some goblins, and these goblins are absolutely fantastic. I've got a little army of them myself because they're just beautiful. I know those are available on his website. Right, we got Keith Lowe, who did like all the concepts, right? So the thing about MegaCon is it was a group of guys that were friends before they built a company, right? They were guys that knew each other from school and work, and they built something really special and created a world that people loved and appreciated. And, you know, unfortunately some things happened and it kind of went away for a while. So, definite shout outs to Tom and Keith and Brian and the MegaCon team. You guys are awesome.
Definitely, man. If people wanted to, learn more about Merc Minis or learn more about you anywhere they should check out.
Nobody wants to learn anything more about me. I'm a pain in the ass.
Well, we'll still put up a link to the Merc's Facebook page and the website.
Yeah, well, you know, Merc's is the important part, right? Mercsminiatures.com will get you to the basically where the store is. It'll get you to the files. It'll get you to a blog that I haven't started yet. You know, being the one-man crew when it comes to basically creating and refreshing everything Mercs, I've got a huge list and not nearly enough time to get it all done. So I will beg for forgiveness in regards to not having an Instagram account proper, not having a Twitter account proper, not having a blog set up. You know, these things all take time, and I just have not had enough of it. But, you know, you mentioned it earlier. I do have my own YouTube channel, Throne of Angels. You can find that on just basically YouTube/Throne of Angels. And there'll be some official Merc stuff going on there. But, again, that also takes a lot of time. As you guys know, doing a podcast takes time. Doing videos takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's where you can find me and Mercs.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you again for coming out. I just want to remind people that we actually, speaking of fancy social media, just got off our butts and started a Discord. So if you like what you hear, definitely check us out there. We'll put a link to that in the show notes, too. If you want to come talk about Mercs and try to get some people stoked for it in your community, we'd love to have you. And we'll try to, you know, help get you riled up and stoked to get out in the world and start playing this stuff. Anything else, Chris?
No, I think I'm pretty good there.
Sweet deal. Well, I'm Owen.
I'm Chris.
I'm Oz.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.